The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2023, Charting the Course, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join. or by making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, please visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Okay, can you guys hear me? Hi, I'll keep this casual. My name is Krista. I've known about the free software movement since 2016. I've been a user since 2006. I wouldn't call myself a programmer, but I do write code in R, the free software for statistical programming. And this is my first ever Libra Planet conference. So excited to be here. And I'll say that yesterday I attended Richard Stallman's talk, and I started talking to some of you wonderful people, and I kept noticing this kind of recurring problem that I think we've all encountered, and I think during the talks earlier today, it's been highlighted a bit, and that's the struggle that we all face in trying to convince loved ones, family members, friends, colleagues to move towards free software. Can I just get a show of hands of how many people have had encountered? Okay, so this is something that we're all dealing with, right? And I'm sure you all have jumped through the hoops of like talking about how free software is so great and non-free software can be so malicious and dangerous and look how great and cool free software is and going through all the features and how wonderful it is. And I've done this so much when I volunteered in Portland, Oregon at Free Geek, giving out laptops and talking about the free operating system. And for some reason, no matter what I did, it just wasn't a good enough selling point. I could just not get it across. And in the keynote talk earlier that we saw right before the lunch break, the whole idea of like the sun and the wind competing to get the person to take off their jacket and how do we get people moving, right? This is the free software movement. So I was thinking about this, and I was trying to think about this deeply, and like, what is the fundamental reason? Why are we struggling to do this? And I was like, okay, what is it? And I stumbled upon this idea. So this is a very rough sketch of the idea, so forgive me if I can't say it so eloquently. But I think what we're forgetting, or what we need to remember, is our value, our self-worth. And what I mean by that is we shouldn't treat freedom as something that's kind of distant, like this ideal world, that we would like to achieve that. And having free software more available and more abundant would be great. That would be nice. We need to think of it as something more of, no, that's something we must have. That's what I want to have. And we need to start thinking about it, not for like the sake of others necessarily, although that's great, or like for the sake of our children, but we need to think about it as for ourselves and change our mindset entirely. So I'm challenging you guys to think that, no, I am worth all my freedom. I deserve to have those freedoms now, every day, all the time, everywhere, anytime. That's what I'm saying here. And it's kind of a simple idea, but I think it's really, really important because I feel like we forget a lot of the things that we're actually aiming for. Technology is great and it can solve a lot of problems, and we have so many problems that we want to solve, but somehow we've allowed technology to kind of harm us. It's not really the internet we want, it's the people, the ideas, the knowledge, that the ability to share, that's what we want. It's not these fancy computational high computational power computing that we want, it's the ability to solve big problems. And I think it's only when we remember what it is that we really want, and only then, that we can realize that we're worthy of all these things. I have no idea how I'm doing on time, so I'm like trying to rush through this.
You have like
25 seconds. Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and jump to something that I like to say to people who give me this phrase. You might have heard this phrase, and this is more related to privacy. The phrase, you have nothing to fear if you have nothing to hide. What I like to say in response to that is, I have nothing to hide, only everything to protect. And I think of the Underground Railroad, and that wouldn't have been possible without privacy. And we can't have privacy without free software. And without privacy, we're not going to get to freedom. So you guys are the Digital Underground Railroad, and I just want to give a big thank you. And remember, you are so worth everything. Thank you.
Next, we have Ilya.
Okay. This clipping count toward, okay, I'm gonna talk about how I blog using free software. And I use my own software for this, so this will sort of be a demo, but also a exploration of what's possible. What browser here? I clicked it. It's loading. Okay, so I have a website with my own name. It's IlyaGolko.com. I don't know if anyone can see it. I have some pictures on here, some slides. And I'm new to this browser, so I'm just going to create a profile here. I'm going to click the register button, and I have a profile. So immediately I can start blogging using the system. I can say, hi everyone, thank you for coming to the Lightning Talks. So this will become an item. It will not be displayed on the homepage yet because I have not approved it from an account that has approving rights. But anyone who looks through the queue can see this and filter it up to the, like I could do this from my phone, for example, because my phone already has a key on it. I like the web because it's a very mature platform and it has a history of freedom. For example, if you wanted to write an iOS app or an Android app for like Android 1.0 or iOS 2.0, you wouldn't be able to do that. But with the web, I can actually write this website to be compatible with Netscape and up. And that's the result of the platform being so open and there not being one authority on what features are going to be supported, what features are not going to be supported. So anyone can build a platform like this. It just takes like a few Perl scripts and you can take your text and make HTML pages out of it. And the cool thing about the web is that you can look at the source code and you can archive this. So if the platform facilitates it, you can actually go to the data page and download everything that's on the website and be able to rebuild the exact same website using either your own scripts or this. This is free using GPL, so you can go to github.com. Oops. I know GitHub is suboptimal today. It's called thank you. So that's the GitHub URL. And again, I just blogged this, and I can add a like under this. And I'm at, what, like 3 minutes now? The cool thing about my platform is that there's a chain that links all of these things together. So these new items are going to show up on this chain page, and anyone can validate and verify that they've seen the same items. And they can do this by viewing the chain in its raw form, like this, which has the hashes of the things that were posted and the timestamp, and then a hash of this line with the previous line. So it's chained together like a Merkle tree or a linked list. There's also the option for using GPG with this. So you could do this yourself, your own GPG, or you can create a private key for yourself like this. So I'm creating a PGP private key for myself. And I'm now signed in with my private key, which is stored in my browser only. It's not sent to the server. So now when I publish my profile, that's using my public key. So I publish my public key, and now I can write something, and I can say, hi there. And as you can see, it's signed with PGP. Thank you for watching.
Are you ready? Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Thank you. Clipping it. Oh no. There we go. All right. Can folks hear me okay? And I just, my setup may have broken during the break. So just want to, yeah. Okay. And cool. And I'm just gonna make sure I have a demo quickly. I have a demo. Great. So I'm going to close this awesome retro blogging tool. I mean, the tool's not retro, but the style is retro, and it's awesome. Great. So my name is Holmes. I'm going to talk about Quiet, but first I'm going to just talk quickly about a feeling I've been having ever since. So I briefly worked at Free Software Foundation as a campaign manager in 2009. And since then, I've had this really strong feeling about where free software is going, and maybe you share it too, where free software has been extremely successful at freeing code at rest. So free and open source code under licenses like the GPL is the default when it comes to software development. But where we've had a hard time is freeing code running, because so much of the tools we use run on servers, depend on servers to connect us, and most people don't have servers. So the software freedom guarantees of most of the code at rest goes to the developers and the deployers of software, who are often workers at large companies and the companies themselves, and not to end users. And so what I'm working on is an application called Quiet that gives people the same functionality and experience of using a centralized service, in this case, Slack or Discord, but it does it with code that runs on their own devices so that the software freedom guarantees go to them and not just to the developers. So I'm gonna show Quiet really quickly. This is it. It's, we use Electron, which is kind of whatever, but we're trying to mostly just focus on getting the peer-to-peer stuff working under the hood. We also use React Native on mobile. I'm gonna send a quick message to myself here. Hello, LibrePlanet. There we are. So I just said hello to myself. And the way that Quiet works is when I sent a message on my phone, it added the message to the local state of all messages that's stored on my phone, the phone's CRDT, which is a conflict-free replicated data type, something like Git, added that to its local state, did a hash of its new local state, broadcast its state out over a peer-to-peer network, over Tor, just to the people who are part of my community, not on some global network, some global peer-to-peer network, but just on a peer-to-peer network that includes devices that are in my community. And when they got that new updated state, they said, ah, that's something new, and they fetched all the pieces of it they didn't have using a protocol that's sort of a cross between BitTorrent and Git, built in IPFS. And then now they have that state too, and all this happens automatically, of course, and the messages appear. And all this happens very quickly in less than a second, so you're using a messaging app. So Phil is part of our community. That's P. Durbin. He's in the back there. He might send me a message right now from back there. We have this community because some of us, we were planning a meetup in Boston that's actually happening next week. We're trying to do it monthly. It's in Brookline at Hamilton's at 5 p.m. You should come and ask me about it later if you'd like more information. But this is a picture he took later today. So we support sending images and arbitrary files the way any normal application would. And another thing is users don't have to be online all the time, because if they go offline and come back on later, they sync what they missed. How much more time do I have? Great. So there's two more things about this that I think are really important. The first thing is you don't need a server. This is your server, that's your server. Your own devices that you already have are your server, so you're in control. But if you want to make sure that there's always some node online, if you want to have that server-like performance where there's never any point where someone could send a message and there would be no one to receive it, you can run an old phone and put it in the corner. You can have a laptop under your desk. You can have three of them. And then your server's never going to go offline because there's three in different locations, right? And we haven't done this yet, but you could potentially build the monitoring of those servers into the peer-to-peer network itself, so you don't have to mess around with like Pingdom or PagerDuty or something to know when your server went down, because it really doesn't matter, and because you'd be able to see it in the network itself. The last thing I would say is that we built a messaging app, but what I'm really interested in and my aspiration is to make a stack that other people can use to build any type of application in this class of team collaboration tools. So this is just like shared data in a group of people that can be written by anyone under certain rules. So you can make Trello, you can make Asana, you can make free software versions of Figma or of anything. And I think if we get this stack right, we'll have an opportunity to do a free software style barn raising like the GNOME project or the GNU project itself to replace all these centralized team collaboration tools with free software services that give users themselves the power to run the application and control what it does and the software freedom guarantees that free software gives you. So that's my talk.
Thank you.
Oh, also it's at tryquiet.org. Tryquiet.org is the website.
What?
Tryquiet.org. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is Eric here? Eric? There he is. So our next lightning talk is from Eric Gallagher.
So, hi, I'm Eric Gallagher, state legislator from New Hampshire, one of 400, which, yeah, we have a pretty abnormal ratio of legislators to population in New Hampshire. So it's quite easy for random people to get elected. One of the things I've been working on in the state legislature has been free software related legislation. So my first term in office, I tried doing it in one big bill, called the, so, you know, due to all these bills that have catchy acronyms, I tried to come up with one myself called the Software Act, Securing Our Freedom to Write and Read Everything. Unfortunately, by making it an omnibus, people thought I was trying to do too much in one bill. So this term, I split it into 7 different bills plus then there are also 2 more tech-related ones I think might be of interest to this audience. I've got 9 bills that I'm going to try to get through in 5 minutes. Luckily, they're all pretty short. So hopefully I'll be able to do that. I don't have any slides. These are all just from paper. So first was House Bill 67, relative to the right to review source code of software in criminal cases. So there was actually a court decision in which a defendant won the right to inspect source code of some DNA testing software that was being used as evidence against him. So the legislation here was basically to codify that. Unfortunately, the state attorney general's office didn't really like that much, just due to the potential for slowing down proceedings due to just the sheer amount of software involved in our lives that this would open up the inspection to, which when he was mentioning that during his testimony was like, okay, yeah, and this list of all these places you're mentioning where software is involved in our daily lives, that's precisely why we need this, is just because we have all these unaccountable black boxes that can be used to determine whether we've done things or not. So that's House Bill 67. So House Bill 73, I had a right to repair bill. This one was actually not my bill. I was picking up from another representative last year. I think there's going to be a keynote. One of the keynotes is on the topic of right to repair, so I won't go too deep into detail on that one. House Bill 327, prohibiting the state from requiring the public use proprietary software when visiting state websites. So this one was basically my LibreJS compatibility bill for state websites. This one, basically the state IT director testified against it with this huge fiscal note about how much it would cost. Apparently, it would cost a lot more than I thought it would. Finding out a way to do LibreJS compatibility more cheaply would be something worth doing. I had one about non-compete clauses and non-disclosure agreements. Since one thing I've heard in the free software movement has been people saying, oh, I can't actually help fix this bug because my employer has a clause in my contract preventing me from looking at source code, even though it's a free and open source software project. It looks like I might not actually get through all of these. I also had one. With the LibreJS compatibility one, that one was for web-based software. I had a similar one for desktop software, HB 617, which had a similar thing happen to it. The state ID department thought it would take too much money to change things on their end. House Bill 556, relative to the duties of the IT Council, basically just getting more free software in our IT Council. And then House Bill 589, prohibiting state and local law enforcement agencies from participating in the enforcement of copyright claims against free and open source software project. So that basically would have made New Hampshire like a sanctuary state for free and open source software developers fleeing from persecution by proprietary software companies. That one also, I think the Department of Justice kind of misunderstood it, so I'm going to try to reword it, come back with some language that's closer to some of the other non-enforcement legislation or non-cooperation legislation that we have on other topics. It looks like I'm out of time, so I am here in the audience, so if you would like to talk with any more ideas you have about things we can do legislatively for free software, feel free to get in touch with me.
Thanks. So are we running that cable? Okay. So next we are going to make an attempt to play a pre-recorded talk. Our intrepid tech team intern Nick is running a cable right now. Okay, we don't have the connections to make this work. Is Asta here? I don't know if I'm saying your name correctly. Are you ready to talk? Great, okay.
So could you put this?
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Asta, and I'm here to bring some New York energy to your Saturday afternoon. I have a background in user experience, and I'm currently a grad student at Parsons School of Design. It's been a long time since I last visited Boston, 7 years roughly, and I feel happy to be here. It's my first time attending LibrePlanet Conference, and I'm excited to introduce you to Zubhub, which is a new documentation and collaboration platform for activity-based learning. So Zubhub is created by Unstructured Studio, which is an educational nonprofit registered in Canada. And we have one of our team members there, Srishti. Then we have tech team with Suchakra, and I am in the design team. As a team, we develop tools, activities, and resources to engage children from the underserved communities in creative learning experiences. And our work is inspired from the MIT Media Lab's four principles of creative learning, which is projects, passion, peers, and play. And this year, I'll be mentoring one of the UX projects through the upcoming round of Outreachy. So now, exactly what is ZubHub? ZubHub is a free and open source educational tool, and we envision it to be used like Wikipedia-like collaborative encyclopedia for activity-based learning. It's available for custom use in schools, libraries, hackerspaces, educational organizations, and so on. Now imagine that all these educational institutions can host their own ZubHub to promote their educational activities and build their online community. Even though there are so many platforms that already exist, like Flipgrid, DIY.org, Padlet, and so on, we could not find a false alternative which is customizable, decentralized, and available. And that is one of the reasons why we were so interested to work on this. As of now, we have our own ZubHub that we use at our studio, and it looks like this. Educators and children can come here, get inspired by a collection of our low-cost activity ideas or existing projects. They can tinker around with the materials and tools and then share what they have built with others. It's used by a lot of children and educators in India as of now. So here is an example of a project that has been uploaded and documented on ZubHub. You can see there's an image, video, ways to share it on different platforms and leave comments. And every user on ZubHub gets a user portfolio that lists their projects, badges they have received, and activity log. There's also one organization that has adopted ZubHub, and they're using customized and self-hosted version to promote their activities and also to organize workshops. We are constantly improving and evolving our ZubHub platform by participating in mentoring programs like Hack for Impact and Outreachy. And we are currently promoting three projects in the summer round of Outreachy. So if you are an educator or developer interested in this topic, here are a few questions for you. How do you imagine classrooms, hackerspaces, libraries, etc., using our platform? And where do you see the gaps and opportunities for us to build upon it further? Thank you so much for listening. If you have any ideas, if you want to use ZubHub or share your thoughts, you can reach out to us on our email ID, hello@unstructured.studio. And if you want to volunteer your time in contributing code to ZubHub, you can check out our repository on GitHub. Thank you so much once again.
Okay, I'm told we're going to make another attempt to play pre-recorded talks. If that fails, I'm going to riff for 5 minutes, which will be bad for everybody, and I apologize. So let's give it a shot.
A lightning talk.
I can kind of hear it.
For Libra Planet 2023.
Very quietly.
My topic is the first device.
All right.
A speculative project or a utopian reenchantment towards technological recovery. Leading medical organizations advise against screen time during the first years of life. Yet, children are exposed to parents' mobile devices and screen media consumption patterns from birth. Growing digital distrust ranges from criticisms of exploitative and profit-driven industrial standards to warnings about the dominance of cranky social media and to investigations into the behavior of machine learning algorithms that present little eyes with a vast, absurdist, mimetic informational singularity with unpredictable and alienating psychological and developmental effects. in the middle of this, tech professionals are increasingly choosing low-tech or tech-free outdoor schools for their children. And here are some references, both Steiner and For School are movements that I have been investigating in terms of their tech-free approaches. So then the question becomes, is tech-free the only way towards, or the primary stepping stone for free tech in education? In any case, this project catalyzes a trope of a utopian first device to imagine a different path for our future. It draws a connection between the principles of the free Libre software movement, Silvia Federici's politics of care, community, and technology production, and Luis Guillerme Vergara's proposal of paralaboratories for forest school thinking and rewilding. The questions that emerge from this are, how do our primary encounters with personal information technology devices shape and direct the mind, especially in the early years? What should be the character and purpose of the first information device we give to our young? What would it even look like? What would it even feel like? What kind of content would it carry? How would it apply our best findings regarding learning, development, and creativity? How would it be meaningfully open-ended? How would it empower free, self-directed learning? So I guess these questions just remain hanging as a re-enchantment to help redefine our approach to technology and to our world away from exploitation. I wish to briefly mention that these questions, for me, come up from the Free Libre Technologies Arts and the Commons on Conference of 2019. That I co-organized, and the speakers and thinkers mentioned earlier were part of it. I also wish to bring up the work of Morgan G. Ames, who talks about the ethical gap or the lack of ethical accountability in the humanities definition of ethics. That is characteristic of the contemporary platform capitalist landscape. I also wish to mention the work of Ben Williamson, who talks about the need for us to develop meta-educational technology critical machinery. Again, in response to the lack of ethical accountability in this field. And so I propose the first device trope, not only as a utopian exercise towards conceiving of better non-exploitative technologies, but also as an example of such critical meta ed tech machinery. And here are some links to related work. Thank you. I hope that this lightning talk will bring together people who are interested in these subjects, and that some of you will contact me to talk more and unite forces around these issues.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lina Ceballos, and I am part of the Free Software Foundation Europe. And today, I want to briefly our reuse initiative, which is aiming to make reuse the standard of communicating licensing and copyright information. We all know that the four freedoms that come with free software are defined by the licenses that we choose. And that is the reason why declaring this information in a proper way is so important. So let's talk a little bit about how the state of play is at the moment and what are the common mistakes that we have seen when it comes to declaring this legal information. And the first one is that there is indeed missing information about license and copyright of own or third-party code. And this would lead that that reusers may overlook chosen licenses for all or for specific files. There is also a little bit of uncertainty when it comes to multiple licenses, which is often the case that our project is under more than one license. So we're not really sure how to declare this information. It's also a little bit ambiguous when it comes about the way some licenses are displaying. So, for instance, we find projects that are under the GPL3, but we don't know if it's the GPL3 only or the GPL3 or later. And there are also some conflicting best practices. So some projects store the text of the license on a file called copying, others on the file called license or on the README file. So sometimes finding this information is a little bit tricky. And that is the reason why Reuse is here to help you to make it easy to find this copyright and licensing information, because this information is going to be stored in every single file in your repository. And we are avoiding silos in that regard, because we are storing this information as close as possible to the file. This information is also readable by humans and by machines, so we have some tools that can also identify this information. Why not? We're also trying to make easy and fun to declare this information for developers, no matter the size of the project. So how are we going to make our project reuse compliant? This is very easy, and we will follow just three simple steps. So the first one, we're going to choose and provide the license, and we're going to store this license in a directory that is called licenses. So this is one of the first features of reuse, that we have a specific directory where all the licenses in our directory, in our repository will be stored. Second, we're going to add the copyright and license information of every single file in a header that will look like this. And we also have some alternatives when we cannot edit a file directly. So we have a plain text file that we will call .license. So exactly after the name of the file, .license. And we also have the option to use a .dev file, and that we're going to store in a directory called .reuse. At the moment, we're also working to release a reuse YAML file. So in the future, we won't be using the .dev file anymore. And the third one is that we'll confirm the reuse compliance of our project with the help of our linter tool. And then it's going to scan the whole project, and it's going to tell us what licenses we're using and how many of the files of our project follow the reuse specification. And also to briefly talk about the components of reuse. So we have a set of best practices, so a specification that is aiming to make reuse a standard. We also have a tutorial with an FAQ, so I invite you all to check our website and take a look at all this documentation that we have there. We also have a helper tool that it supports developers in making the project reuse compliant. And we have also an API and a badge that you can also add once your project is reuse compliant. Regarding the reuse adopters, so we have more than 1,400 projects registered in our API. We also work with some projects from the Next Generation Internet, which is a EU-funded project. On the community side, KDE and all its frameworks are also using reuse, as well as Coral, GNU Health, Weblate, and some public funded projects from the German Aerospace Center. And then we also have some users from the corporate side. You can see on the slide, Siemens, Huawei. The kernel of Linux is also partially reuse compliant. And the question now is whether you and your project want to join them in implementing the reuse specification in your project. That was all for today. I would be very happy to take any of your questions via email. You can always also add yourself to the mailing list. We have a mailing list where you can join the discussion. You can also check our website, and also we are free software, so we pretty much appreciate every contribution that you have to improve the tool. So thank you so much, and I wish you all a wonderful day.